There we are.
And just like that,
how we doing?
We're back.
Yes, we are.
Welcome to 2022. Happy New Year. The Joe and Doug Show is back after almost a month hiatus, which is wild. Missed Christmas, missed New Year's, missed fireworks, missed gift giving, all of that. You were traveling a bunch. So why don't we catch up a little bit and hear what happened? So where did you go? Did you break into the Space Center? Were you able to get a tour? Take us through your trip.
Went to tech. Well, first we went to New Orleans.
Right? Yeah.
Just check things out there. I'd never been there. And it was okay. It was okay. It was worth a day spent to see it.
Okay.
And I moved right along.
Would you do any historical stuff or just?
Just kind of walk the streets and see it. It was a little too much for me.
Like, okay.
I'm just not a big fan.
Fair enough.
Food was good, but
what'd
it had
get?
Some history. I had some dessert things and I had a couple of cocktails and ate outside and it was 50 degrees. So it wasn't great.
Okay.
All right. Fair enough. Okay. And so
then you went to the great country of Texas.
The great country of Texas. And so we kind of hugged the Gulf Coast and we did Galveston and Corpus Christi. And then we ended up in South Padre Island, which is right across the bay from SpaceX.
Okay.
And that was a real intent and purpose of being there. I spent 5 days gazing across the, you know, the bay there at this big crane and Starbase launch pad. So now asking if I broke into the facility.
Well, you said you were going to figure out a way to get a tour, figure out a way to get some memorabilia, merchandise.
You did not have to. Like, the road is in the middle of nowhere and you can like drive up and the rocket is like right there. And there's only like a sign that says, a sternly worded sign that said private property. But you're 10 feet away from a rocket that's
really
going up in the air. It's
crazy. That's cool. Did you take a selfie with it?
Oh, yeah. All over the place.
Do they sell memorabilia and t-shirts?
No,
stuff
it's not
like
very
that?
Commercialized. It's just a Starbase. You know,
okay.
There's some. They have like what are those yellow or not those yellow, those stainless steel RVs or motorhomes, Airstreams.
Right? Okay. Yeah.
So they have a whole like rows of Airstreams. So like when the people are going up in these spacecraft or in town, and because there's no hotels anywhere near, they throw them in this Airstream trailer park.
And is that where you guys stayed with Gus? And where did you guys stay?
No, we stayed across the bay. We stayed
at South Padre,
Padre Island. Yeah.
Nice.
Really cool. Like, I would definitely do it again.
Okay.
And
was Ryan super fascinated with it? Yeah. Good.
Yeah. When I talk about this stuff and being there, two completely different things.
Absolutely.
Like, we have watched these launches, every one of them, but when you're there, you're like, I am like standing on hallowed ground.
Now, how big is the rocket? Like, you see it on TV and you see a certain size rocket and you have it pictured in your head. Is it 4 stories high? Is it 3? Is it
I'm guessing, like,
big as you think, or is it bigger?
Like 12 to 15 stories tall.
Wow.
It is huge.
It's like shooting a building into space.
Yeah, right. And that's just half of it. Like the 15 stories is only the top portion of it. Then there's a booster portion that
it's under
sits
the
underneath.
Ground.
So it's double that.
Wow. That's fascinating.
Yeah.
So you did that. You spent 5 days there. You celebrated your 29th birthday again. And did you do anything special? Cake, ice cream, any of that sort of stuff?
Yeah. I was out of keto the entire time.
Beautiful.
So it was the most garbagey that I've felt in the entire year. But it was fun. I mean, it was good to get out. I was still running every morning and the weather was beautiful for running. So I felt good in that respect. But
nice. So when Joe's out of keto and he goes for cake and ice cream for his birthday, what cake and what ice cream does Joe go for?
Well, they made like a yellow cake with chocolate frosting, and it's my favorite. And I couldn't eat a whole lot, just is too much, but it was good to be out for a little bit.
Nice. Any special excursions, or did you guys just hang on the beach or?
No, nothing real big. I mean, it was cool that we had our own little beach because we took the Jeep and we went to a place where you could drive out onto the beach. So not very many people can get out there. We could, and you got to have your private little beach. And
that's
we went swimming
cool.
in the ocean. And then our next stop, we went up to San Antonio.
Okay.
Now,
The Alamo.
Yes,
you went to the Alamo.
I went to the Alamo. Now, so we were there for 2 days. The first day, we just kind of went around, putted around, and got our bearings. We went to the ghost tour while we were there, and they gave us a nice history of all the death and destruction that happened in San Antonio. The next day, we showed up, and we started doing our thing. Like, we wanted to get there early and reserve a tour for the Alamo.
Okay.
And we started seeing all these Oregon people that were around, like all these shirts with colleges. And I'm like, there's a lot of people from Oregon. We arrived on the day of the Alamo Bowl. So across from the Alamo,
oh my
they
goodness.
Were having the college bowl tournament, and I'm like, there are people everywhere. It was so terrible. Like, if that, you wanna,
that's Joe's nightmare.
Yeah, if you want to picture Joe's personal hell, that's it, right?
Yeah, Joe's idea of heaven is like the middle of the woods with no one,
right?
And here, hell, like, this is put them around about,
did
you
they
know,
invite the whole college here.
Yes, yes, they did. Yes, actually, they bust them there too, I'm sure. That's wild. So you got to be there for a college football game. So I'm sure you saw lots of drunk frat guys and stuff like that.
There's people everywhere.
Yeah.
But we were doing the tour of the Alamo, and we were there at the same time as one of the Oregon coaches. And so we got to see a couple of celebrity college people.
That's kind of cool.
I didn't really care much.
But yeah.
They
no,
made a big deal about it.
That's cool. So was the Alamo cool?
It was. Yeah. A lot smaller than I pictured it in, you know, how historic.
I've never been. So.
It's not big.
Okay.
But I like historical stuff. So I can 100% like being
you.
On that, on the ground with like when we're out in Philadelphia or whatever, uh-huh. where our founders were. I mean, that gives
best.
Me shivers. And
yeah. Stuff. Yeah. Absolutely. The best. So you did Alamo, and then where'd you go from there?
Then we started heading home because we were now, okay. you know, 14 days into this trip, and it's time to start going to colder weather. And we weren't real thrilled about it.
It's cold out today, bro. it's like 10 degrees.
Not fair.
Yeah. So you made your way back home, and then you had to get back into the routine, mm-hmm. and you had to come back to the office.
Well, this is like a phenomenon. Like, this mm-hmm. is the first time that's happened where, you know, on the way back, we usually talk about, okay, you know, we hit the reset button. What do you guys want to do different? Do you want our habits to be different? Do you want to include anything else? And we had all these great ideas. And you know how hard it is that once you get home to break your environmental habits, mm-hmm. like your desk and the rooms and what you did before you went, it like draws you back in and tries to make you do old stuff again.
You know, it's interesting. When I first started as the pastor at Bridge of Hope, my father-in-law, who had been a high-end executive for years, he said when he took on a new position or a new office space or any of that, he would change one thing every so often. He'd pick an interval, sometimes every day, but at least one thing a week. He'd move a piece of furniture. He'd take a picture down and put a new picture up. He would shift the atmosphere. And he said to me, he said, it's a subtle thing. We were setting up my office when I first moved in, like literally my first day in the office. He helped me organize my books. And the conference table had been facing the elongated way. And he said, let's turn it. And I was like, okay. And I didn't think it was that big a deal. And he's like, just you should move one thing every week. And so the first week I took all the old hymnals out of the sanctuary. The second week I got a new pulpit. The third week we got new offering buckets. So I try to do something every week. And he said, it does this subconscious thing in your brain. And it just indicates to everybody change is coming, change is coming, change is coming. And so he goes, he would do that in his office spaces. And so I took that. And the first few months I was here, I tried to find one thing in the building that I would either take out, something that was old that needed thrown out, a couch that needed replaced, a refrigerator in the nursery that, you know, looked like it crawled out of the 70s and, you know, that sort of stuff. And just, hey, we're going to replace one thing. And people would see that and be like, wow, you know, pastor's changing a lot of stuff. In actuality, I wasn't changing a whole lot, but it just, you're used to the same space. And so it pulls you in, you do what you've always done. That's why I love to rearrange the furniture in my house. When you move, I used to do it in high school and I didn't know why. I just, every 6 months, I'd be like, I'm going to put my bed on the other wall or whatever. I didn't have a huge bedroom. So it was the bed went on that wall and the dresser went on that wall. All right, let's flip it around. But it does something to you psychologically. So did you move any furniture or anything? Or
no, this is more behavioral things where when I do something that I don't necessarily agree with, like I got to make it like crazy absurd. Like the swearing was a big one.
Yeah. Your swear jar. How's that going?
That jar's gonna have a lot of money. That's for sure.
I know a great place you can donate it when you're done.
You volunteer. You got a place, huh?
Hey, I do. I know somebody.
But I've had these great days where, like, I'm under control of my mind that I'll go a whole day, a whole stretch without having to make a donation to that jar. Mm-hmm. And then some days I get into old habits and it's just like sailor.
Yeah, and it's interesting because you go. You know, the Bible says it this way. There's a scripture, Joe.
Oh, no way.
We haven't been able to push that button in a while. That we return to our sin like a dog returns to its vomit. And it's this idea that it's gross that dogs do that, but there's a reason they do that. And in the same way, you know, we're so conditioned by our minds, by our habits, those neural pathways have been created that we'll go back and do something that we said, oh, I'll never do that. And you might go a month. You might go a week, but then you slip back into that if you don't create new pathways for your mind to work on. And it takes time and it takes dedication. It takes motivation, inspiration, takes everything you got to switch a habit.
Well, those words are very well lubricated in my vocabulary. And so I'm trying to be disruptive and make it so that it's harder to do things. And it's tougher because it's something I got so comfortable with, and that makes me madder than anything is I got comfortable with it.
Are you allowed to substitute?
Yeah, I've done a lot of substituting.
I forget the show. My wife watched the show. The Good Place. I don't know if you've ever seen it. Okay.
Yes.
My wife thought it was very funny. She watched the whole thing. I watched several episodes over her shoulder and I thought it was cute. But they're in heaven, so they can't curse. And so everything they're going to say things and it switches the words out. Sometimes the phrases are very, very funny. And I was just picturing Joe, you know, coming up with a an interesting phrase to switch some words out. So your swear jar. What else are you switching up? What other habits?
Throwing a lot of stuff away. I'm looking at stuff that I may haven't touched in a year, and we got a rule in our house anyway. But even in spite of having a really good rule about getting rid of stuff, I look in a drawer. I'm like, I've touched anything there, Joe? Is that one sacred? Is that one special?
I've been thrown away. I had an idea today. You know, you mentioned throwing away junk. We were in staff meeting and Lee Joe was talking about, you know, a junk room or a junk drawer. A lot of people have those. And I'm like, man, that'd be a great sermon series to talk about getting rid of baggage for people, like stuff that you just had sitting around in your life for forever. You stuck it in that junk drawer over there and it's not doing anything. It's not serving any purpose, but you're lugging it from this house to the next house, from this car to that room. And you just need to throw it out. It needs to get out of the way. So, so for me, one of the things that I've started doing, four new things this year. And I told myself, I said, I'm not picking a big goal. I want to do four things daily, every day. One I've struggled with, three I've nailed. So every morning I want to weigh myself. And so nailed that, which is makes me feel good. Two, I want to pray for, with, and over my wife every day, even if it's just for 5 minutes. So we stop before we go to bed or before I leave in the morning, just asking, you know, God to bless her or whatever it might be. And then I'm going to read for 15 minutes every day. I literally set a timer on my phone, pull out my current book. And I'm a reader to begin with, but sometimes I'll go a stretch without doing it. And then you get out of that habit. And then it's tough to like, you know, I was three chapters into this book, but I put it down for 2 weeks. And so just 15 minutes every day, I'm already like 1.5 books. And we're, you know, 10 days, 11 days into 2022. And so that has been really good. I've been trying to close my Apple rings every day, all of them. I did for the first 5 days, 4 days, nailed that. And then we had the sick bug visit our house. And so my wife and my mother-in-law were in bed in the guest room in quarantine. and we had a kid that juggled a fever, another kid that juggled a stomach thing. And I was the only healthy adult, which I was like, I didn't have anything the whole time. So I had to juggle the kids and I was exhausted. And so there were days where I didn't have another adult to watch them to go out for a walk or any of those sort of things. So I missed a couple of my Apple ring days, but you know, I'm back on course, back on track with that one. But I just wanted four habits that I could look at every day. I have a little checklist in my phone. I like checklists. I push the button and it checks it off. It makes me feel warm and fuzzy on the inside. And I do it. So similar to your swear jar, it's one of those things that, you know, I would weigh myself every once in a while when I was feeling like a fatty. I'm like, oh, I guess I should get on the scale and see what the damage is. Or if I was doing really good, like, let's get on the scale and see how well I did. But just to get into the rhythm of every day, it's just like checking your bank accounts every day. Like, hey, I need to see where we're at. I need to know for my own mental sake. And the other thing that is not a daily one, but I'm trying to invest $5 or $150 every month into some crypto stuff that we had talked about beforehand. Crypto, by the way, if you're going to buy this, they're calling it the Omicron dip right now.
Yeah.
It is dipped quite well. And so I've just been like, ooh, that's really low. I'm going to buy some. And trying to be judicious as it goes down, understanding that, you know, if I'm in this, the curve's going to go back. And so I'm excited to see what happens with that. And I've done some research and I found a couple new coins that I'm feeling really good about. Cause as I've gotten to the background of them and I've listened to other people talk about them, I'm like, you know, I kind of buy into that. So it's not just like I buy into, I'm going to make money by buying this. It's like, I think I like that technology and I think I like what it stands for. So it's kind of cool. So
all right, let me throw this at you. We'll come back to crypto. Cause I do want to talk about it, but I want to sort of mess with our traditional philosophy that you and I usually put out there. So what I found myself.
So we're going negative. Is that what you're saying? No.
Not negative, but here's the deal.
Okay, let's do it.
Take something I really like running. Mm-hmm. And when I'm really goal oriented. So I usually put a time or a distance or some kind of measure so that I can know if I succeeded or failed. And I was making running less fun for myself and not as great. So time went on. I got less and less enjoyment. And I was like, when I'm on vacation, I'm just going to run until I don't feel like running anymore. Right. And so I ran. And I got to the end and I wanted to see, I was still curious as if I ran less, ran more, because I really wasn't paying attention. What do you think? Ran more.
Yeah.
Right. Because it was fun. I wasn't paying attention to the footsteps.
It's intuitive. So I've been listening to a couple of these TikTok accounts and a couple spots that they're anti-diet health people. And you always hear people like, oh, it's not about a diet. It's about a lifestyle. And then the lifestyle becomes the diet. And it's all kind of convoluted. But they're doing what they're calling intuitive eating, which I think is really fascinating. And they talk about, you know, the way you lose weight is you go to a calorie deficit. But we want to do that with foods that we like. We want to do that. And obviously, I know there's things, and you and I've had that conversation about macronutrients and all that. But their whole concept is just around weight loss. Like, obviously you can cut out a macronutrient, you're going to lose a bunch of weight. Obviously you can do Weight Watchers and count things and you're going to lose weight. Their point is, though, like, you're already wired a certain way, and so instead of fighting that, like vacation, like, I'm not going to set a goal that I have to lose 10 pounds. So I've lost 5 pounds in 11 days now. I set no goal to lose any weight. I just said I'm gonna eat when I'm hungry, and I'm gonna do my best to not eat beyond being full. And so someday, like yesterday, I ate lunch. I just wasn't really hungry at breakfast time. So I just got up and went, and I said, when I'm hungry, I'll eat. My body will tell me when to eat. I ate a pretty decent sized lunch and then went back to the office, was working. I had a board meeting last night. I had 3 cups of coffee at the board meeting, which was a disaster for my sleep. I'm laying in bed at like 11:30. My wife's like, why aren't you tired? And I'm like, I don't know. I feel really antsy. I feel really anxious right now. I'm like, couldn't figure it out. And then this morning I woke up, I'm like, why did I only get like 4.5 hours of sleep last night? I'm like, I drank 3 cups of coffee at the board meeting. What was I doing? And I've been trying to do it in an intuitive way. Like, I'm not here because I got to run 5 miles. I'm not here because I'm only going to eat 33 calories at this thing and 500 calories at that thing. No, I'm going to, you know, eat some of the foods that I enjoy. I'm not going to gorge. I'm not going to eat just because it's breakfast. I'm going to do this in an intuitive way. And I'm just trying to test the waters with it. And because I'm weighing myself every day, I can kind of see the ebbs and flows. And the scale hasn't gone down every day. It's done a little bit of this, but overall in 11 days, it's gone down 5 pounds just from me being conscious of, you know what, I'm going to run, but I'm just going to run till I, all right, well, I'm going to eat. I'm just going to do it till I'm full. I'm not going to, you know, I don't have to do this. I don't have to do that. And, it feels good. And I did some walking and some other stuff that I think probably helped with that too. So, yeah.
And I think there was a lot of power in the pressure that I created with, if I did that every time or just ran what I wanted to, there would be sort of like diminishing returns on
that. I agree.
And then, so I do have to return at some point, but I have to oscillate. I think I have to go like, whatever is healthy and makes me happy and makes it enjoyable. And sometimes it's going to be X, and I can't memorize the rule set. It can't be like, I always do it. I have to implement the tool that makes me the better version.
Yeah.
So I got to be both in my disposal.
Yeah. You got to find out where the benefit for you matches the need and want in your heart and life. So, yeah, that's cool. I think for me, the other thing that my wife and I did is we bought Jesse Itzler's Big Ass Calendar. That's literally what it's called.
I can't even say that because I would go to the swear jar.
Oh, yeah. That's
you got words in your vocabulary now that
Joe, I think in 2 years, if we count ass as a swear word, you know, if I'm referring to a donkey, I can use it in the King James and it's totally legal. But in a little over 2 years of doing podcasts, I think that's the first closest I've ever gotten to.
Right.
But so we bought this calendar and it is like 5 feet by 4 feet. It's massive. We put it up on our wall and it's designed that you can see all 365 days in one shot. And so we bought stickums and we're in the process. The goal of the calendar, so we have like our tactical calendar that we share, and it's got our doctor appointments and haircuts and that sort of stuff. And then my wife keeps a memory calendar where she writes down like, you know, Charlotte got her first A, and you know, we had the piano recital and who was there and that sort of stuff. So she has one of those, but that's more, that's handwritten. And that's like, hey, we want to be able to look back and go, oh, in 2014 we did. How cool was that? This is, Jesse runs an organization called Build Your Life Resume. And it's all about doing the travel, the dreams, that side of things. That's not your haircut, you know, that kind of deal. But it's like, I want to go to California. So what's that going to look like? How am I going to get there? We want to set those big goals and then tranche them out on this massive calendar. So like, and things that we're looking forward to. So we got, you know, like my birthday's coming up in February. We got a family vacation planned in July. We're looking at doing another one around Thanksgiving. So, you know, we're looking at those things going, all right, we're going to get to do some travel. We're going to get to go here. Like we have a couple of spots that we want to do with the kids. Some, I think for my birthday this year, I'm going to take my boys to the Hall of Fame because they're just pumped about football and all things football. And it'll be my birthday's on the Super Bowl. So I'm like, we got to work that out because yeah, right. My boys will have a ton of fun with that. But, you know, I look at that and I look at those sort of things and I'm like, how am I creating experiences? You know, we just took them all to the Harlem Globetrotters and my mother-in-law got us seats that were like three rows off the court and the kids were going bananas. They had a blast with it. We went to Hibachi the last two Sundays. It was awesome. And we were like, we should really bring the kids back. They did it one time. Graham cried the entire time because it was like 3 years ago, 4 years ago. It was too loud. The flames, he was sobbing. It was a mess. And we're like, but they're older now. They'd probably love this and it'd probably be a ton of fun. So that's the purpose of this is like, let's build some experiences. Let's put some things on there that we said, oh, wouldn't it be nice if we could do that? And let's just go out and do it. So, and I know you've been doing that with Gus the Bus and you guys have been going to different places. But this is like designed to help people do that. There's also an element like, he does a bunch of health and fitness stuff and there's other ways to use it, but that's what we're using it for.
Yeah. That intentionality is so important. And I think people are really good at when they're budgeting their money, they're okay with it, but they get into areas like
most people suck at budgeting their money.
But even people who are good suck in the other departments because it's not intuitive when you're like mm-hmm. budgeting your health or budgeting vacations or budgeting your family life or whatever, you know, you're basically tracking what you're doing and then figuring out what you want to do. So if you want to take a vacation, like you don't judge yourself. It's your ideas, right? You put whatever you want on there and then you just figure out mathematically what you're cool with. So if you want to spend $800 eating out in restaurants, nobody cares.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
Whatever makes you happy.
Yeah. Well, and it's like, you know, you look at those things. So like we're going to the Jersey Shore in July. My grandfather at 91, you know, got a house and my brothers are going to be there and all the kids. And you know, I looked at my wife and I'm like, this could be like the last vacation with Pop-Up. Like he's 91. Like maybe he'll live to 100. He's pretty healthy and but no reason to think that he's going to pass tomorrow. But at 91, you don't know.
Right.
And so looking at those things and going, how do we make those count? You know, my mom's in her 60s. All right. You know, if she has the average life expectancy of 78 or whatever it is, 79, you know, how many more summers do we have? 10, 12, 15. So like, how do we make those count? I know that sounds kind of morbid, but when you start
you're bumming me out, man. Yeah, I was the one that was going to be negative.
But when you start thinking that way, it makes you want to take advantage of those things. Like, you know, especially having my dad and my father-in-law pass so close together, it made you think like, all right, people say all the time, like, you know, if you quit or if you die, your job posting will be posted before your obituary. Because, you know, at the end of the day, your employment, what you're doing for a living. Well, it's important when it matches your purpose and passion, all that sort of stuff. But the vast majority of people, it's a paycheck. And we spend so much time making sure work is happy and work is satisfied that we're skipping out and not living life. Yep. I was just listening to somebody in their 70s talk about, you know, you work your whole life and then you get to 60, 65, you know, you put in these long hours. I think they worked a union job there, you know, long time. And now my body doesn't work and I'm too old to do any of the things that I wanted to do when I was young. And I missed out on certain things. And I'm like, man, I don't want to be in that spot. Like I'm going to be 37 in February. And I'm like, you know, I'm on the downslope to 40, but I'm like, I got 50 years in front of me, 60 years in front of me. Like,
can I hit you with a culture question since we're going down this road? It's one that I threw out on Facebook the other day, and I'm going to use this. I'm guest hosting on a talk radio show tomorrow.
Ooh, nice. Which one?
Ron Verb.
Oh, nice.
So
listen to Ron Verb 570.
Yes.
iHeartRadio.
That's it. Good job. Thank you.
No problem. I got you.
And so like culturally, you know, society has really benefited from having sort of like Christianity as the cornerstone of its development from the onset. There's a lot of things that exist today that, you know, are happened because people had some moral conduct or moral code that they were depending on. Like as secularism sort of like takes a foothold, I'm curious as to where seculars think they're going to get these principles to be able to take the next generation and figure out how to not be like a primal animal and follow temptations and instincts to doing exactly opposite of what, you know, is good and whatever. And a lot of people had the on my Facebook post, they had the idea that somehow genetically we knew good somehow, like in genes that we can somehow ferret through and find kindness. Somehow we just know it. And that seemed like pretty hocus pocus for seculars, you know, making fun of the spaghetti flying spaghetti monster. It sounded to me like it was really flim flammy.
So it's a super interesting concept. When you start getting into the origination of good and evil, where does it come from? Is it built in? Is it intuitive? I will say that I have never met a child. None of my four kids were intuitively good. All of them knew how to deceive me. They knew how to hide things from me. They knew I didn't have to teach them that, which is crazy. Like Charlotte, an angel, perfect. But there were times where she knew she had something she wasn't supposed to, and she would conceal it from the authority in her life. No one taught her that. She did that. And then, you know, as the boys, they just, I mean, at this point, but you look at that and the things that I have to correct them towards the good. And so I'm a firm believer that, you know, we're built in with that natural bent towards evil, that, you know, some would use the original sin kind of concept, that's inherently passed down, and that goodness and virtue and those things are given to us by our parents that are nurtured into us more than are naturally produced, if that makes sense. And that's a whole philosophical discussion that we can.
Well, when you look back, like the evidence suggests that historically we haven't acted in great, you know, form, honestly.
Yeah. But think about every government everywhere without any limitations. It always takes itself to genocide into a horrible, horrible place every time. And sometimes in the name of God, but not necessarily by the principles of God. Christianity doesn't have a great track record historically with some of those things. But just because someone did it in the name of God, I often say to people, doesn't mean they were actually Christian.
But it evidentiary, it was people, no matter what the religious stripes,
exactly,
and it hit that end. So it, to me, evidence suggests that it's the people is the flavor of what causes those primal instincts of conquest and pillaging and, you know, every sin that you could imagine.
Yeah, absolutely. And untethered to the divine, people have no reason to be good. Why?
Well, why would you?
Because
you're self-serving. 100%. Right. Even good people are self-serving.
Yeah, yeah.
You gotta talk yourself out of not looking out for number one.
100%. I've had conversations with mentors where, you know, this came up or that came up, and I would say, oh, you know, this is, I used this with a mentor a while ago. I said, oh, this is, you know, such a cool opportunity, such a good opportunity. And they said, good for who? Oh, well, for me. Well, you know, but in that sense, like, you justify yourself in that space, even for good things. You know, if you go back and you look at the Garden of Eden, right? So Adam and Eve are put into essentially utopia, perfect. You know, God's walking through the cool of the day. They're hanging out with animals they name. There's, you know, there's no strife. There's no sin. They're naked. They don't even realize it. Awesome. And God says, look, here's the deal. There's one tree that you can't eat from. You can have anything else you want. You can rule. You have dominion. Do whatever you want. There's one tree. And it's and here's the thing that people don't get. It wasn't the tree of sin. It was the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And I tell people all the time, good will kill you just as much as evil. And so when they took that fruit, the Bible says their eyes were opened. And there's something about good and evil that just does something to people. And we've seen all throughout history. I've never looked at somebody and without some sort of divine connection, regardless of religion. But sometimes, we could have discussions about Islam and other religions that have led to some horrible, horrible atrocities, including people, like I said, doing things in the name of Christianity that were terrible. But all of them that produce some sort of goodness, inherent goodness in that Judeo-Christian kind of value, like you were talking about, that's built in, it all stems from a connection with God. And without that, why do it? Like, I should just go out and make as much money as I want. Why be committed and faithful to my wife? Like, what's the advantages of those things? And that you're getting into some philosophy class and other stuff.
But I think that anything, I don't care if it's a religion or if it's the town square or just your mentors, anybody who sows being better than naturally you would become, you know, is what everybody should support. It's not something that nags someone into good behavior. It's the responsibility of a civilization to keep people under that kind of moral control.
Well, but and in our current kind of bend and philosophy, we have a very secular, humanist, and pluralistic society. So everybody's right, and therefore nobody's right. And when you start playing that game of, well, they're just as much right as you, and you're right as them. And I'm not talking about heaven and hell. I'm talking about in terms of, you know, why shouldn't people murder other people? Why shouldn't, you hear, so there's a big cry in the political spectrum about racism and slavery and all of the atrocities that had gone on for millennia. And it was up until America abolished slavery and we led the charge and the abolitionists and all of that sort of stuff. You know, you look at that history and it's really beautiful what mankind stepped up and did. But most of those abolitionists weren't abolishing slavery because they were doing it because of a moral obligation. They were standing up. They were preachers and they were people saying, this isn't right. This goes against God. You know, Dr. King, he was a preacher. His whole cry in that movement. And what we have today is this, you know, secularization of what is a moral issue that was carried by Christian abolitionists and preachers and all this stuff. And it's been hijacked by this secular culture. And it's got all kinds of things that are a part of it that Dr. King and those people, it would be abhorrent. They would never stand for some of those things, but it's because it's been hijacked.
So, and I know what your answer is when I ask anyway.
Yeah.
So you believe that there's a revival that's coming that corrects what we're seeing now.
The pendulum always does. I mean, historically you see it, you know, constantly, if you drop the ball on your desk and it hits, it swings out. You know, you see that, you know, whether you're looking at, politically, whether you're looking at it economically, you watch the pendulum swing and the pendulum comes back.
So do we wait till it gets so bad that revival comes from that, or do we make the realization that that's the trajectory and correct the steering?
I hope so, but history. I don't think history would be in our favor of most of the time. Large swaths of humanity get wiped out. There's horrible things that happen, right. Wars, etc. And then out of the ashes of that emerge new countries, new people, new thoughts, new all of that stuff comes out of some horrible, horrible things. Unfortunately, that's usually the route. I'm very unaware of a historical example where mankind's like, you know, this could get pretty terrible. Maybe we should change. Most of the time.
Okay, let's do that.
Most of the time they're like, nah, we can fix this. And it just continues to get worse and worse and worse until, you know, people are in the streets rioting and cutting people's heads off.
When it gets too super bad, it gets super real to people. And then they are willing to do something that maybe they objected peripherally,
sure,
or superficially. Now they're in because it means it's threatening their family and their communities. When you can't go outside because it's too dangerous, because people now have lost the fear of death and lost the fear of killing and whatever.
Well, it's interesting. All you have to do is look at polling. So like recently, like I think yesterday, there was a poll out, and for the first time, people are more concerned about the economy than they are the pandemic. For the first time that polling came out, I don't know what the percentages were, but for the first time, there were more people concerned about the economy than the pandemic. For the last 2 years, it's been pandemic, 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 pandemic. We don't care about the economy because people were very concerned and the fear porn and all that sort of stuff was pushed. And now that the polls are switching, have you noticed that the vernacular of our public officials has switched? Mm-hmm. And it's been very interesting to hear the CDC and others, things that people were saying 18 months ago that were taken off of YouTube or told were heretics, conspiracy theorists, all this sort of stuff. The CDC is now saying the same things as those people were saying 18 months ago. And so you look at that and in the context of what you're saying right now, we move so quickly between issues. That pendulum swings. 2022, pendulum's going to swing politically, and I almost guarantee 2024, pendulum's going to swing politically. It just does that, and it's going more and more and more. But the further out you go, the more you pull apart,
the more drastic the correction, and the faster that it happens.
Correct.
We're not doing 10-year swings. We're doing 4 years, which will turn into 2 years.
Yep.
And it'll be swinging so fast, your head will swivel.
Yeah. So, and that's an interesting thing to throw in the middle of, you know, the context of self-help and, you know, being the best version of yourself, because New Year's resolutions are important. And even in the midst of crisis and the world doing what the world's going to do, I don't have any control of that. I only have control of me. So I still got to get up in the morning, focus on this is what I've been made for. You know, there are a lot of parents. I've had a couple conversations with people like in my age bracket and a little younger. They're like, I don't know if I'm going to have kids. I don't know if I'm going to bring kids into this world. And I'm like, my mind, you know, people are like, are you worried about your kids? I'm like, no. Like, they've been built for this. Like, God had them born in this moment, this time, to Sam and I for such a time as this, because they're going to be the people, the reformationists. They're going to be the ones that help shift this. They're going to come alongside. And so, like, I don't fear their future. I'm anticipating that they're going to create things that I've never thought about, and they're going to do things and go places that I never will. Like, that's the hope and the world that we live in. Now, could the world devolve into World War III and all that be wrong? Absolutely. But I don't think you start with that premise.
Well, see, when we were traveling, like one of the big questions when we go to a place, I have to look in to see how dangerous it is, because first job is to go protect my family. Yep. Right. So I have to take you into like a drug war zone. That's bad planning on my part. I probably don't want to do that. But first and foremost, you know, when you in comparison to the level, you know, in Girard where I grew up, I mean, everybody left their doors open and everybody mm-hmm. trusts their neighbors and, you know, everybody's name, right? I moved to a neighborhood that you don't do that and you don't know anybody's name and you're more on your own island. So when I watch this trajectory of internal, people are separated, big things happening, everybody's hating on one another, you know, the world is kind of moving further and further away from you. And, you know, when I felt like I wasn't very smart when I came out of high school. And I felt like since then that the world's just gotten dumber. I haven't gotten any smarter. The world just devolved. So if anybody out there is hurting for traction about getting better, the world might turn to crap by the time you get around to it. And, you know, you might get success by default.
You know, it's interesting. David Goggins, I follow him on Instagram in a couple different spots. I read his book, Can't Hurt Me. It was very good. And he says in there, in this current climate, he goes, people are so soft. You just have to have an ounce of toughness and you're going to rise to the top in whatever industry you're in. And he fuels that through physical health and some other things that he kind of pushes. But his whole thing is, you know, nobody cares. Like, stop being the victim. And Joe Rogan and him are buddies. And Joe got a birthday thing from him. Now, if you want to fill up a swear jar, just listen to David Goggins, okay? And former Navy SEAL, that kind of stuff. So he sends Joe this text and Joe reads it on his podcast. And he was like, nobody cares that today's your birthday. Get up and grind, MF-er, and, you know, all sorts of stuff. Like, and Joe's reading it and he's reading it like in his voice and stuff. It was very funny. But we've so bred that into our culture that, you know, victim mentality across the board, that like, oh, you know, I deserve this and I deserve that. And it's like, no, like, I got up today and it's a gift. And that's different than I deserve. Like, I don't deserve to wake up tomorrow. But if I get up tomorrow, it's a gift, and I owe it to the gift giver to do well with it. And I think those are different mentalities that, you know, when people get up and they're like, well, you know, I deserve to have this type of job, or I deserve to have this. And it's different than law of attraction. I deserve, you know, it's that mentality that it's owed to me on a silver platter, where, man, when I get up, I'm like, today's a gift. Like, what are we going to do today? Like, what surprises are around the corner? Like, I get to do stuff every day that's exciting and awesome. And when I go to bed tonight, if it's my last, I hope I lived well today. You know, you get that question, like, if today was your last day, you know, what would you do differently? And I hope my answer is nothing. Like, I live today exactly how I wanted to live it. And some people are like, well, I would have done this and I would have spent time with this person. Well, then you should have went and done that, because you're not
still
promised
time
tomorrow.
On the clock. Go for it.
Exactly. You know, I listened to a little bit over Christmas, did some reading and some podcast listening, and watched an interview with Jesse Itzler. And he was saying, he asked the podcast interviewer about his parents. He said, how often do you get to see your parents? And he said, oh, like once or twice a year. And he said, all right, twice a year. How old are your mom and dad? Like 68 or something like that. He goes, all right. So they lived to 78, see him twice a year. And he goes, instead of saying you have 10 more years with your parents, let's say you have 20 more visits. He goes, that changes the game. Mm-hmm. because if I need to make 20 times count, what am I doing each of those? And so it's just a different mentality to approach life. Like, it's a gift, but it's one of those gifts that's finite. It has an ending. And so, and today could be that day. So did I do today what I wanted to do?
I hit you with some heavy stuff on.
Yeah, we started with catching up.
Let's get back to crypto.
I promise this is only Pellegrino. I don't know what Joe has in his, but I just have sparkling water in mine.
All right.
Crypto.
Yeah. If that was the best segue we could come up with on it.
This deep philosophical talk about visiting your parents before they die. Like, you know what? We should invest in crypto. Well, we're going to talk NFTs on Thursday.
We are.
Because Joe and I are going to make an NFT and we're going to sell it and make money. It's going to be fun.
Yes.
Somebody's going to buy it. It's going to be cool.
So I bought $100 worth of Ethereum so that we can put this example. Have you ever done anything? I mean, this is fresh, brand new NFTs.
I have no idea what NFTs are. Yeah, this is going to be fresh. I'm literally
awesome.
I know that they're, you know, people are using them as contracts. I know that there's kind of like, I heard Gary V talking about authentication papers for like sports cards and memorabilia coming through NFT in NFT format. And I've heard other people talk about digital real estate, which I really don't get. People spending millions of dollars to own a piece of digital real estate doesn't make sense to me. But I've also seen, Joe, in the metaverse, which I don't know if that's connected to NFTs at all, so we'll have to talk about that. But there's one or two churches right now that have bought space in the metaverse and are holding services in the metaverse. Like, mm-hmm. People are going digitally into their church.
Yeah,
it's totally wild. I watched Life Church is doing it. Craig Groeschel's always on the cutting edge of that sort of stuff. And I am watching this thing and there's little digital people like they're in the room listening to him preach, people raising their hands during worship. I'm watching this going, what in the world am I watching? So I'm pumped to talk about all that stuff Thursday.
Let's set the stage here because I want to answer the question why, because a lot of people that might have interest have no idea why we're even going down this road. What is
the I don't know why I'm going down this road
of this.
Yeah.
Okay. So I would say that everything that's happening innovation wise is happening because of trust.
Okay.
Centralized authority has ruined everything, right? Somebody who has final say over something ruins everything because they can take a person and they can kick them out of the sphere. We don't like the fact that somebody has ultimate say because you take XYZ person, that could be you, and then you have no say in it. You don't have authority of it. So if you create a system that is free from centralized control, mm-hmm. then you have something that has more freedom from that tyrannical oversight.
Okay.
Right. And so the first thing that happened, and this was sort of like what I would consider the metaverse or the first version of this, is having decentralized web. Okay. So the web 3.0, I'm sure mm-hmm. that you mm-hmm. have heard of it. Yep. So right now you have registers authorities, companies that have the ability to sell domain names. So we have youngstowncomputer.com.
Right. GoDaddy or Bluehost.
Registered
or whatever.
Through GoDaddy. Yeah, yeah. Hosted by Amazon.
Right.
Right. So the centralized authority is that if, let's just say I did something that somebody didn't like, two people could kick me off.
Yeah. Yeah.
GoDaddy can go into my account, turn off my domain. Amazon can go my account, turn off my server. And I have no say because I don't have a power button. It's all connected through those two centralized authorities. Web 3, my domain is lodged in a ledger that nobody has ultimate control
of. Which is the whole blockchain.
Yes. When Bitcoin came around, it was a coin, but it was a better carrier or it was a better transport mechanism than it was an actual coin.
Okay. Right?
Because nobody can mess with it. So this non-fungible means that nobody can replicate it. It's a
non-fungible transaction. Is that with the T?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. So how this works with the digital real estate is if you cordon off and buy some space in here that you have ultimate control over, it's yours. Nobody can tax you on it. Nobody can take it away from you. It is yours because you claimed it, right? And it's going to become valuable because you're going to trust the authority. It's going to be like the in the beginning, sort of like the Wild West, where the players that are going to go there aren't playing from a moral place
That's the big concern. Dave Ramsey and others that are like anti-crypto are like, you know, there's no rules for this. This is just crazy. Don't put your money in there. It could all be gone tomorrow.
Right.
Which so it is high risk, but it's also high yield, which is why people are putting their money in it.
Right.
You know, I So I really like Ethereum. I've done a bunch of research and I understand that the way that they're set up and designed, they are allowing for people to come and basically create on their blockchain, where other people, their blockchain is more set, if that makes sense.
Yes.
Where Ethereum, you can kind of come in and create stuff. Now there's another one that's similar to Ethereum, and this is one I'll throw at you. It's Polygon. It's called Matic. And so essentially, I heard Mr. Wonderful talk about it and a couple others, and they were saying that it's basically a juiced up version of Ethereum, selling way cheap, but people are starting to eat it up because it allows even more flexibility and creativity, and it's faster speed wise. And they think that it will not necessarily overtake Ethereum, but it'll ride its coattails and provide some things that Ethereum can't because of the way that it's set up. And I'm like, ooh. So I bought some of that too.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
So, and so the mechanism that we're establishing is here is having some kind of decentralized method to be able to trust sourcing. So we're going to play around with it and like sell songs and artwork and GIF images and whatever, but that's just sort of like dabbling. That's seeing, proving the stuff out and letting people jump in it and create hype on it to see what works and what doesn't. If it ferrets out and it works well, then you can put stuff in there that trust, like your vote can go into the blockchain.
Interesting.
And you can offer.
And it's more safe than our current voting mechanisms.
Way safer, right? Way safer. So
what keeps people from hacking into it?
So you have all these people that participated and it has to have agreement. So I can come convince you, but I can't convince 5 million people to hack something. So I can hack it. It's right there. I can go in there and change one little ledger. And then when I submit it back in there, since nobody else agrees that that's supposed to be there, it gets rejected, right? Mm. So stuff that joins it the right way gets accepted. Things that joins it the wrong way gets rejected. So if I lodged a vote into the system, that person doesn't have, you know, evidence that it came in the right way, it gets kicked out automatically. It does not pass muster.
I'm so fascinated by this. So we're going to create an NFT. We'll talk about what we're going to create on Thursday and how we're going to do this. I'm totally interested. So we're going to use Ethereum to do it, is what you're saying?
I'm going to take this video and I'm going to compress it down, and we're going to make this the thing that we put on an NFT. This will be a sellable show.
Interesting.
And so for future's sake, what Joe perceived.
Now, how would somebody buy an NFT? Where do you go to buy an
NFT? A marketplace. There's a bunch of platforms that you're allowed to publish in. The record goes into the Ethereum blockchain.
Okay.
And then where you publish it out is the transaction is lodged through one of these marketplaces.
Okay. So like we go to Coinbase to buy certain types of cryptocurrency. Not like that. This is a different app.
They are the ones responsible for actually pushing the transaction through on the blockchain, but they're like that middleman that takes us, we publish it, they put it in.
I'm so interested. That's so cool. So I'm setting aside a little bit to buy a little more crypto. I've done now I've been in it 2 months, and I've watched it do a little bit of this and a little bit of this. And I found a couple of guys that I like on the video, and they said, so basically there's three different people that get into crypto. There's the get rich quick guy that never gets rich quick. Some do, but it's very rare. Most of the time you get in and you're like, oh man, I thought I was going to make money. And he said, but then there's the long term and the day trader. And he said, the day trader is watching the ebbs and flows, and they want to sell at the highest point in the day, and they want to buy at the lowest point in the day. And they're watching it, and it's what they do. And they're going to make, you know, 20 cents on this one and whatever, but they're going to sell hundreds or thousands of shares and they're going to make money, and then they'll buy when it comes back down. But people over the long haul, he goes, if you look at the history from 2000, whatever it was, 9-8 when Bitcoin came out through to now and all the, you know, altcoins and everything else, you know, they all do this kind of S, but as long as it's going like this, you know, you might be down today, but if you hold on to it for 12 months, at the end of 12 months, most of these coins, Ethereum, Bitcoin, Bitcoin Cash, whatever, they've all trajectoried up. So my plan right now is just to continue to hold and continue to buy, because Omicron has caused a dip. So there's, you know, coins to be bought for cheap.
Yeah, I loaded up over these last couple of days. So
yeah, it dipped, like some of the coins dipped 20% in a quick amount of time.
Oh yeah.
So, but then it goes up 20% in the same amount of time. That's the whole thing, is people are like, oh my gosh, I'm losing money. Like I think currently I'm somewhere around, I think you said you put about 2,500 in yours, and I'm somewhere around 1,100 or whatever in my Coinbase account. But right now it's hovering, between 7 and 8 because it's on this down cycle, but I know it's going to kick back up. So
now, do you, on your investment, do you have like a long-term portion and then the in and out portion? Like when you-
I have not done any in and out.
Okay.
I've just, I've tried to buy the coins that I know the most about and feel the most comfortable with. And, I bought some Doge just to kind of like tip my hat to Elon a little bit, and hopefully he'll talk about it at some point and it'll jump up and then I'll sell. but I don't know, looking at that. But other than that, there are some people out there that like Bitcoin's the only way to go. Like, don't buy any other coin. All the other coins are crap. But it's interesting to watch as this becomes more and more mainstream. Like, I remember when it first, I think 2014, 2015, I started hearing people talk about it for the first time. And I was like, what are you talking about? Like a digital current, like, it, you know, nobody knew what it was. I mean, some people did, but it was a very like niche market. But then when Bitcoin jumped, I think it was 2017, and it hit like, it went from 2000 to like 20,000 in that year, everybody. And that's the first time I jumped in and bought some stuff. And then I got out too quick.
Let me make a prediction.
Yeah.
2032, 10 years from now.
Okay.
1 million per coin is what Bitcoin's going to be at. I'm really? Making a public prediction.
2032.
1 million per coin. So you could start eyeballing that and seeing what your portfolio would be like if it was valuation was at $1 million a coin.
Bitcoin selling what, like 35,000 a coin now? It's down pretty
something
good.
Like that, yeah.
So if you spent $35,000 today,
about one Bitcoin,
and you sat on it for 10 years, you're saying you get $1 million return.
Yep.
Wow. How about Ethereum and some of the others? I know Ethereum's kind of
So Bitcoin is one of the only ones that are 21 million and that's all they'll ever mint.
Right.
Ethereum and Doge, and they'll be in, you know, a finite infinite amount created. So there's a little inflation that's going to happen in those other currencies.
That's tough to gauge.
Yeah. So that's going to be a chief mechanism in purchasing things, but long-term store is going to be in Bitcoin like always.
Yeah. That's good. Oh, look at Rick. Hey, Rick. Comment
that was
on
that Roe Marie. That's swearing, I'm assuming. We're going along with the swear jar. Thank you for masking the swear words for the swear jar.
We gotcha. Yeah. Rick. Appreciate you watching, Rick. Well, it's good. It's good to be back. And we will be back here on Thursday. We're going to talk NFTs and how to do that. So if you're curious, you know somebody who is, we're going to dive into that and we're going to experiment. So you're going to get to watch us literally make one, and we'll keep you posted on it and be able to dive into all things about
you can
that.
Even buy it. We'll start it off at like $1 and see what happens.
Rick, you should buy it.
There you go.
We'll teach you how to buy it. It'll be good.